Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are unpacking a really wild set of sources.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a story that, I mean, it just challenges every idea you might have about courtship. We're talking about a relationship that went from zero to engaged in, what, a few weeks?
A few weeks, yeah. And the thing that powered this this super fast romance was a family mystery.
A 10-year-old mystery, no less,
yeah.
Involving medical malpractice, insurance fraud, and a really tragic car crash all the way in Michigan.
It's an extraordinary story. And what's so fascinating is how these two strangers, one is a super logical, numbers-driven guy, and the other is this, you know, very emotional woman who's just been betrayed.
Right.
How they form this unbreakable bond by just focusing on solving this old high-stakes injustice. It's almost like shared chaos just turbocharges intimacy.
It really forces the issue. Okay, so let's start at the very beginning because it really sets the stage for this clash of personalities.
It does.
We're in a theater. Our guy, Herman, is looking for a seat, and he finds one next to Eliz, but she's saving it for her boyfriend, Dimitri.
And they immediately get into this, like, passive-aggressive little fight over the chair. It's great. Herman, the man of systems, just says, I don't see your man.
And she snaps right back. What is certain in this life? I expect him. Just instant friction.
That friction is so key. It's, you know, high tension chemistry, even if they just think they're annoyed with each other.
For sure. But before we get into the romance, we need to understand Herman.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
This is a guy who is built on, well, on strict, quantifiable logic. He's an econometrician.
Which means he advises the North Holland province on infrastructure.
Exactly. His entire job is to calculate the effects of, say, replacing traffic lights with a roundabout. He measures traffic flow, he predicts outcomes, he ensures everything is predictable.
And he's about to walk into the most unpredictable situation of his entire life.
Completely.
Because, of course, Dimitri shows up.
He does.
During the intermission, and he's arm in arm with his secretary, a Joe Slopes. Eliz, who's been saving the seat all night, she just explodes.
And that's it. A 2-year relationship just poof, gone. In this moment of very public humiliation.
That breakup is the catalyst for everything. And this is where the story just goes completely off the rails of normal human behavior.
It really does. Because Eliz, moments after this huge breakup, having just met Herman, she invites him home.
And not just that, she immediately starts sharing her deepest anxieties with him.
Yeah, about her ovaries ticking. It's so intense. She feels this pressure to have a family before she turns 40.
The sources even say she's 33, but sometimes tells people she's 38.
Just to, what, ramp up the pressure on herself? It's incredible. That level of vulnerability with a total stranger is, it's shocking.
So why him? Why does she trust him?
Well, I think she sees Herman, this man of stable logistics, as safe. Her last partner, Dimitri, was unpredictable and just failed her in the most predictable cliche way.
The office affair, right.
Exactly. So Herman is the opposite. He's a stable system. And with her guard completely down, he's like a safe harbor in a storm.
So she invites him home that first night.
Yeah, though she makes it clear it doesn't have to mean anything physical.
Uh-huh.
It's just this instant bond forged in chaos.
Which sets the stage for the real mission. And that only happens because of the ex-boyfriend.
Right, right. Because Dimitri, the ex, goes to talk to Eliz's father, Johan Meidring, for a farewell conversation.
And that conversation prompts Johan to finally open up about all these family secrets he's been holding on to for years.
A decade of secrets. It's like Dimitri's departure unlocked this whole hidden tragedy.
So what's the story?
It's heavy. Johan reveals the history of his sister, Susan, and her husband, Luke. And also his late wife's sister, Louise, and her husband, Harry.
Okay, so just to be clear, for everyone listening, Susan and Luke are Eliz's aunt and uncle on her dad's side.
Correct. And Louise and Harry are her aunt and uncle on her late mother's side.
Got it. So these two families, they move from the Netherlands to Sparta, Michigan to chase the American dream.
Yeah, they start this big joint farm enterprise. Luke handles the dairy, about 250 cows, and Harry is in charge of the apples and fruit orchards.
It's the classic immigrant success story.
Until it becomes a nightmare.
Yeah.
About 10 years before our story starts.
What happens?
Eliz's uncle, Luke, he starts getting these terrible symptoms like double vision. And he's diagnosed with a really aggressive brain tumor.
Oh, wow.
He's rushed into surgery by a local neurosurgeon, a Dr. Ralph Pritchard.
And the sources point to this this really chilling detail that he supposedly shared with the family.
He told them it was his first time doing that specific procedure.
It was his first time. Are you serious?
He said he'd prepared by watching surgical videos. 3 days later, Luke died in a coma.
Unbelievable. And that's not even all of it.
No. the tragedy just gets worse. On that same night, Luke's wife, Susan, and Eliza's other aunt and uncle, Louise and Harry.
The ones on their way to the hospital.
Yeah. They died in a horrific high-speed car crash. Their car just slammed into a guardrail.
So in one night, four family members are gone.
And the emotional fallout from that, just, it severed the family. Luke's son, Jens, he explained that the American side of the family felt totally abandoned.
Why?
Because the Dutch family just sent these, like, impersonal, formal condolence cards. Not a phone call, nothing. So the American family cut all contact for 10 years.
And on top of all that emotional pain, there was a financial disaster.
A huge one. There were four separate life insurance policies. Each one was for $1 million. So $4 million total.
A massive potential payout.
And the whole thing was handled by their real estate broker, a man named Kevin Pritchard.
Hang on, Pritchard. The same last name as the surgeon, Dr. Ralph Pritchard.
Yeah.
That can't be a coincidence.
The source material is very explicit.
Mm.
They're brothers.
Wow. Okay, so that is a giant red flag, a massive conflict of interest.
A huge one. And it gets worse because the family's only received $1 million. The policy for Luke's death.
So what happened to the other $3 million?
It was withheld. The official reason given was that the three deaths in the car crash were suspected to be a suicide.
A suicide? Why?
Simply because of the high speed of the impact. That was the only thing they considered.
So now we have Herman, the econometrist, the guy who calculates traffic flows.
About to apply his very specific skill set to a 10-year-old potential murder mystery.
Detective Herman is on the case. So he and Elias, they fly to Michigan. First stop.
They get the old police report.
Yeah.
And it confirms two things. The high speed and the presence of significant mud on the wrecked Toyota Camry.
The mud. That's the first clue, isn't it?
It's the first physical anomaly. I mean, think about it. If you're speeding to a major hospital, you're on a paved highway, right?
Right. You shouldn't have a car caked in farm mud.
The system is showing a deviation. So they track down the impounded wreck at a yard near Grand Rapids.
And this is where it gets a little funny. Herman has to, like, crawl over all these junked cars to get to it.
He gets completely stuck. The source says he looked like the Hulk with all that green because he's just covered in this farm mud.
So this super meticulous data guy is now stuck upside down in a junkyard covered in dirt.
But it pays off. He gets his samples. They send the mud for analysis using gas liquid chromatography, GLC.
Which is basically like chemical fingerprinting, for anyone who doesn't know. It tells you exactly what's in a sample.
And the results are definitive.
Yep.
And they are shocking. The mud has gas oil, you know, diesel, which they traced to a spill in the orchard. That's expected.
But
it also contained brake oil, brake fluid.
Oh, that's not supposed to be there.
Not at all. That is profoundly suspicious. It's the deviation Herman was looking for.
So what does that mean?
Well, the mud proves they were off-road in the orchard. But the brake fluid, that suggests a different kind of failure. Herman inspects the wreck himself, and he comes up with this critical theory.
Which is?
That the brake line coupling wasn't cut. It was loosened.
What's the difference?
It's everything. A cut line is obvious sabotage. A loose coupling causes a slow, deliberate leak every time you hit the brakes. The system drains over time.
So the car becomes a time bomb.
Exactly. And when the crash finally happens, it just looks like it was caused by high speed. It looks like a suicide, not like catastrophic equipment failure.
So this changes everything. This isn't an accident or a suicide. It's potential murder.
Calculated sabotage.
Yeah.
And now Herman has the data to prove it. And they know exactly who to use it against.
The Pritchard brothers.
The pressure campaign they run is just brilliant. They do it one by one. First, Dr. Ralph Pritchard, the surgeon.
And with him, Herman focuses purely on professional liability. On his incompetence.
Right. He doesn't mention murder yet. He basically says, you were unqualified 10 years ago. You were personally responsible for Luke's death, and we're going to expose you.
Threaten his career, his reputation.
And it works. Because Herman forces him to admit his connection to his brother, Kevin, the insurance broker. The conflict of interest is now on the table.
So to make it all go away.
The doctor caves.
Yeah.
He agrees to write a formal letter of apology. And more importantly, he authorizes the hospital's insurance to pay out $1 million, the maximum liability.
Justice number one, secured.
But that was just the warm-up. Now they go after Kevin Pritchard, the broker.
And this time, they have the hard evidence.
Oh, yeah. Herman hits him with a brake sabotage analysis. He suggests Kevin was the link, that he was maybe responsible for the whole thing.
And he brings up the motive, that Kevin was nearly bankrupt 10 years ago.
He gives him an ultimatum. 2 weeks to pay the remaining $3 million, or they go to the federal police.
The pressure worked just like Herman calculated.
It did. Jens, the nephew, confirms it all later. Both Pritchard brothers came and apologized in person, and the rest of the money, the $3 million, was paid out,
bringing the grand total to $4 million.
The full amount. The family accepted the apologies and the settlement, and they agreed not to pursue any more legal action. Case closed.
All thanks to a man who, just a few weeks earlier, was calculating the efficiency of roundabouts.
It's incredible. And the rewards for Herman and Elize were substantial.
The American family was so grateful they transferred $500,000 to Elize.
$500,000. And she, in this perfect gesture of their partnership, immediately splits it with Herman.
$250,000 each. For a couple who just met.
A complete life-altering event. And things fall into place for her family, too.
Right. Her dad, Johann, he finally moves in with his new partner, Cornelia, who, it turns out, is a gifted seamstress. A coupouse.
Making couture-level clothing. Even wedding dresses.
A nice little bit of foreshadowing there.
Yeah.
Because finally we get to the personal milestone Elize was so worried about.
Herman, showing he understands her fear of losing her independence, but also that he's a man of action, he gets down on one knee.
And asks her in Dutch, Allerliefst, Allerzies, zu je met me willen trouwen.
Dearest Elize, will you marry me? And she says yes, immediately. They move in together the next week.
What a whirlwind. Herman goes from a single guy analyzing traffic reports to engaged, an instant father figure to this family, and a $250,000.
All in a few months. Mm-hmm. All because of a tragedy that happened a decade before he even met her.
It's just a remarkable story. This meticulous numbers guy solves this incredibly complex emotional plot of fraud and potential murder using the exact same skills he uses at his day job.
It's an amazing application of his logic.
But the sources really do leave us with a provocative final question, and it's about the nature of justice. The family had clear evidence of sabotage that points to criminal conspiracy, to murder. But when a huge financial settlement, $4 million, is on the table, does that pursuit of, you know, absolute justice start to fade?
In favor of closure, in favor of financial stability. It's a tough question. Jens, the nephew, even said it himself when they took the deal. You can't buy your parents back.
Yeah.
But maybe, just maybe, that money buys you the right to finally move on.